You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 331 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Thank you to all of those of you out there who've been tuning in each week. Numbers continue to grow, and hopefully we're continuing to keep you interested during these challenging but extraordinary times in which we are living. Of course, here in Colombia, things are significantly worsening, and of course, we're expecting the mayor of Bogota to extend our quarantine from July the 1st and give us a stricter shutdown as figures of contagions and, of course, the tragedy of deaths continue to increase in Colombia. So what feels like something that was useful at the beginning, the quarantine that was brought in early and received so many plaudits from around the world, seems like we've been just delaying the inevitable a little bit. You know, it just feels like we've been waiting for this to happen with no plan B. This is the problem that we're having here in Colombia. I don't hold the president or the mayor, obviously, guilty of these things. That's just no government, aside from perhaps Germany and New Zealand, had any idea of how to manage this. I mean, look at the other countries around the world. And what do we expect here in Colombia with scant healthcare and, of course, such a massive informal economy? Thank you, Ed, again to Jenny Erin Smith for being on the show last week, episode 330, a fantastic and very interesting interview about her book, which will be at the moment, it's called Valley of Forgetting, about the PISA mutation gene, which causes early onset dementia or Alzheimer's. 329, we had Julianne Pacheco talking about her book, The Anthill, based in Medellin. 328, we had a friend to Columbia Calling, Emma Louise Jay, talking about her isolation all alone in rural Antioquia during this quarantine. And of course, 327, Rainbow Nelson in Cartagena talking about the tourism industry and how we can perhaps, you know, create a rebirth of the tourism industry and something slightly better. For the coming weeks, I know that we've got a guy running, Alex Rocha, who's running an NGO in Cartagena, is going to talk to us about what the NGO is doing, but also what is going on in Cartagena at the moment, because the Colombian Caribbean coast is particularly, it's particularly rife with COVID. And of course, I don't think we know quite how many contagions there are in these cities and in these barrios and these outlying areas. We've also got QC John McKendrick lined up as well, and he's going to be talking about his book and the history of the Scots in the Darien area. So we're going to be talking about the Scots and their failed colonial foray into the Darien Gap. So those are a couple of the episodes we've got lined up for you in the future. But this episode, episode 331, we have very special guest Manuel Rueda. He's a Colombian journalist writing for the international press here from Bogota. Chances are, if you cover or if you read anything or see anything about Colombia overseas, you've read or seen Manuel Rueda in the press, because he's prolific. And of course, it's a great pleasure to have him on. So we'll take a short break right now and come back with Manuel Rueda talking about, well, it's a news update, really, a platform for telling us what has been going on in Colombia that perhaps has not made the international press and the mainstream press. So a nice update from Colombia this week on the Columbia Calling podcast, episode 331. Don't go away. Thank you.
La canoa de Bareque para llegar a la playa.
And we're back. This is the final segment of episode 331 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McColl here in Bogota, Colombia. And my very special guest this week is freelance journalist Manuel Rueda. He's actually only a few blocks away from where I am right now. But given the quarantine, given the lockdown that's been extended to July 15th, obviously we can't meet in person and we can't, you know, have this over a coffee or a beer. We have to be remotely recording this interview. Anyway, Manuel has, obviously he has bylines in AP, TRT World, PRI World, Christian Science Monitor. He works for DWTV. He's a busy guy. And I know I've got him just coming back today, researching for a story that he'll be putting together next week. But the reason he's on the show is it's always fun to have Colombians on the show. And also, so we can talk, you know, with a Colombian about what's going on here at the moment and inform you guys a little bit more than what we see in the mainstream press, you know, just a bit more, because we're here, we're on the ground and we're experiencing what's going on. So let me take this moment to say, Manuel Rueda, thank you very much for agreeing to come on Colombia Calling.
Sure, Richard, it's a pleasure. Happy to talk to you, even though it's long distance, like you say.
Long distance, six blocks. That's fine. It's less than six blocks, but anyway. Listen, so you're a freelance journalist. Let's say, I mean, you must be working quite a bit at the moment. There must be stories, you know, what's going on here in Colombia. Plenty of scandal, plenty of unrest and uncertainty. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, and it's been like a lot of stories. Well, these past 3 months, just about the economic and, you know, social impact of the lockdown. I think that's been like the thing that's worried everyone in Colombia recently. You know, because beyond the number of cases, you know, the general impression that I have is that the economy of Colombia, the lifestyle of Colombia is gonna go back like a decade. You know, in
you
the terms
a decade?
Of, I think so. Like in the terms of options we're going to have for entertainment, for travel within the country. I mean, the sort of like the security part is not, I don't think has been that serious yet. Although there are some troubling anecdotes, like this robbery at the shopping mall earlier this week, where, you know, the people with guns came in and robbed the jewelry store in Gran Estación, you know, like in a nice neighborhood, you know, like I would describe like a, it's kind of like an upper middle class place, and they come in with the guns and so forth. That I hadn't seen in Bogota, hadn't heard of in quite a long time. And then, you know, like all these restaurants closed, and I was just doing a story about that a couple weeks ago. You know, how many of those are going to open again? How many choices of, you know, restaurants and entertainment and so forth are we going to have after the pandemic? And then the more serious things, like also the large unemployment rates and so forth. So it seems to me like life is going to be more austere and more basic, you know, like once this thing is over, at least for a year or two. Just that's kind of like the thing that worries me, the impression that I get, you know?
Yeah, no, and I'm with you on that one. I think it's obviously the effects are going to be far greater here than, let's say, in a European or a country or North America, where they have the infrastructure to be able to repair and reconstruct fast. Mm. I was worried when you say, you know, when you talked about, when I read about the let's say, what do you call it, the holdup or the robbery of the jewelry store in the big shopping center, you know, it's desperation mixed with opportunism, isn't it? And I do know, and we're, you know, in a nice part in northern Chapinero here in Bogota, and I know of people who've been mugged around here as well, and or have been followed and have to run into their homes. I mean, things are taking a turn for more sinister, I would say.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example. I was robbed at gunpoint at the end of April. So
no way, I didn't
for
know.
For me, it's close to home. Yeah. It was. I was just finishing shooting a story around the west of Bogota in Gativa, And I was just getting up my car, getting ready to go back home. And some guys on a motorcycle showed up and pointed a gun and took my cell phone. They weren't interested in the car, only in the cell phone, fortunately.
Wow.
But
so were you on the phone at the time? Were you talking?
No, I mean, I was a bit obvious, maybe. I just put the phone on, you know, that thing you put on the car on the... in the front of the car to hold up the phone so that you can see Google Maps. So I was just I just put it there. You know, the guys probably saw the phone. I mean, I was previously taking some pictures with the phone, so maybe they saw me while I was taking the pictures. And so they robbed me. It was a a story of the Venezuelan migrants who are trying to go back to Venezuela. They were there with some buses, but the guys who robbed me were not Venezuelan migrants because of the accent. You can tell. So the city's getting a bit more insecure. You know, we have to be more careful when we're out there, definitely.
Yeah, more vigilant, definitely. It's I had no idea that you'd been robbed, and of course there was no harm, no physical harm to you.
No, I mean, I think I was also very calm and just gave them the phone. I didn't like pose any resistance, so that helped too, you know. This had never happened to me in Bogota. I had another phone robbed, but like pickpocketing style, but with a gun in front of you. That hadn't happened to me here. That's what I mean when I'm saying that, like, this pandemic might take us backwards some years, you know, like how Colombia was maybe not as bad as it was in the 90s, but some elements from the 90s. I mean, like, for example, you know, you have to be more careful when you go out places. For example, you know, there's not going to be as many places where you can go and get a craft beer, I think. I just saw, actually, I passed by Parque 93 the other day, and there's this place, this really nice place I used to go to, Chelarte. And that doesn't exist anymore. They vacated their location. They're trying to stay alive by doing delivery from a warehouse somewhere, but they vacated because they can't pay the rent. You can't, if you're a business nowadays and you can't sell, how are you going to pay the rent of these places, you know? So that's why, you know, it's just like, it seems like it's going to be a bit of more of a, like the progress that a city like Bogota was making in options for entertainment, in options for work, in security. I'm just afraid some of that's gonna go back a bit. You know, I don't think it's gonna be like bombs exploding in places like in the 90s. But you know, we are gonna go back a bit in the economy. It seems to me.
Yeah, it's so upsetting because I mean I realize this is happening everywhere and in you know, to a greater extent in many places, but we are talking from our experiences here. And you know, Bogota was really coming into its own in terms of, as you say, the entertainment. Not nightlife has always been here, but obviously that's this kind of Latin spirit. But I'm talking about restaurants and bars and places to go, and you know, and artisanal coffee shops, which bizarrely didn't really exist that many years ago. It was sort of, you know, you went and had a coffee at the tienda or out from a thermos. You know, it's a now Bogota was actually, I don't want to use the word cosmopolitan, but it was opening up so much more. It was becoming a place you wanted to spend time in, whereas previously people were like, get out of Bogota. And also, you know, people from whose parents were from elsewhere and had come to Bogota, their children would say, yeah, I was born here, but my parents are from Norte Santander. You know, it was always, you denied almost being from Bogota. And I saw this changing. I saw this attitude towards Bogota improving massively, this exciting city. I mean, there's a vibrancy. And this is a major concern now, as exactly what you were saying. And you did a piece, I guess it came out last week earlier this week, on how restaurants are surviving and so on. And I read something somewhere, and you did it for the whole continent, but I read something somewhere of the 90,000 restaurants in Colombia, and I don't know where they get that figure. It must be from the tax office, the DIAN or somewhere. 27,000 have already permanently closed.
Right.
I mean, so I don't know. I mean, these are big numbers. I don't know the veracity of these things, but it's still pretty shocking.
Yeah, you know, and just an example, you know, one of the people I interviewed for this article was Leonor Espinosa. He's like a famous Colombian chef. I mean, we had for the first time in Colombia's history, a restaurant that was ranked among the top 50 in the world by the experts, you know, by this list that comes out each year that's made in London. And this woman was, you know, with her... You could go there and the 12 course tasting menu with the sliver of fish from the Amazon and the edible flowers and all, you know, the ants from Santander made in some sort of jam and put on a toast or something. But, you know, very exquisite, you know, and now this lady's just making, you know, tacos for delivery, tacos and fried rice. Yeah. A good quality.
I'm sure they're very nice tacos.
Yeah. But that's what I'm meaning by, like, you know, the future just seems like it's going to be a bit more austere, at least for a couple of years, you know?
I had an incredible meal that she put on with these guys who have this kind of experimental kitchen, Villanos in Bermudas.
Yes, yes.
Sort of villains in Bermudas. She was there overseeing the kitchen that day. And I think it was like a 9-course meal, but it was amazing. It was amazing. But so, yeah, I mean, we're talking, I mean, we got the cute stories and stuff, but it's about the economy, really. I don't know if, for example, tourism will ever go back to the state that it was or where it was going. People will still want to travel, but it will change. But, you know, what I find fascinating, and of course we follow one another on Twitter, I get into debates, let's say, about what's going on in Colombia and stick to my guns, maybe get in trouble sometimes. So this last week we had the VAT free day here in Colombia, and the government said that I think was 99.8% of all people who went out shopping behaved well, had face masks, waited in lines, and so on. But I would like to know how many people went out so that I know how many people make up that 0.2% that didn't behave well. Because if there were some people, you know, with COVID amongst them, we're looking at a lot of outbreak, a greater contagion taking place after that day. And where did most people go? What I saw, but you can correct me. From what I saw, most people went to the big hypermarkets, the big mega sort of shops where you can buy electrodomestic washers, dryers. But of course, the images we all see were TVs, televisions. Mm-hmm. Colombians are buying these on their credit cards and probably paying in 12 installments. There may not be any VAT on it, but with the installment interest paying over 12 months, the VAT hasn't been saved, what you would have saved on that. And then you're on a credit card as well, and these are all imported goods. I realize that cash going into the economy helps the economy, but shouldn't we be looking at things? I don't know. I mean, I find myself all tangled up with this story about VAT. So, I mean, what was your take on it?
I think the government wasn't expecting people. Like this behavior from people, they didn't plan for it. I mean, we have to keep in mind these days, tax-free days had been planned since last year, right? Before the COVID began, they made a law. They said we're gonna have 3 tax-free days each year. So you know, they maintained it, I assume, because there's pressure also from the. That association of commerce owners.
What's it called?
I forgot the name.
Andy?
Andy is the industrialist.
Confinalco or something like that. I can't remember what they're
called. Yeah, well, anyways, the Association of Retailers, basically, which includes, you know, the people who own Éxito, big companies in Colombia, the people who own Al Costo, right? So, so they maintained, you know, they stuck to what they had planned last year. And, you know, two things happened. People went out like crazy to buy. And also the stores, you know, they didn't have the capacity to do e-commerce. Because I tried, I tried logging into these stores for Falabella. You know, Falabella is a huge chain with stores in Chile, in Peru, et cetera. And I tried also like with the smaller ones, like with these resellers of Apple products, iStore and Mac Center, and all their websites were down. It was really hard to buy. Yeah. So, you know, if you didn't go out in the street to try to get something, you actually risked like losing out on the deal. And we have to remember it's a 20% discount. I mean, the VAT, the sales tax in Colombia is 19%. In the US, it's 5% in some state, you know? It's 9%. The US, where the medium income is, what, five times higher than Colombia? Maybe, right? And the VAT there is 5% or 10%. So in Colombia, people are five times poorer than the US, and they have to pay twice as much sales tax. So I can understand why people were like the bulls charging out of the, you know, the bulls charging out of the stable, you know? Wow, 20% discount. Of course, you know, and so, but yeah, I think the government just misconceived it. You know, one measure you could take is say, let's do it for 5 days instead of 1 day. Maybe that way you control the crowds, because the smaller the time window you leave, the more the larger crowds you're going to have. Or another solution, which is what the mayor of Bogota is saying now, is do the next one just with online shopping. But the question there is, you know, are the commerces in Colombia really outfitted for doing online shopping? Because last week they proved that they weren't. You know, Falabella's page, Al Costo's page, Catronics page, like down a lot of the time. So yeah, we'll see. I think they're going to keep the next one, not to lose face, but they might make some adjustments. They're talking about maybe doing it only online, or maybe doing it so that you can shop in advance, but you just get billed on the day of the tax-free day. That's another solution I heard that the retail association was proposing. So we'll see what they come up with. The question, I think the more bigger question here is, you know, like, why does Colombia have a 20% sales tax? I think it's insane. Yes. What other countries in the world have that? I think Peru is similar. But, I mean, 20% sales. And the answer, I think, one of the reasons that might happen is because here the informal economy is so large that the government misses out a lot on the income tax. So they're trying to make up for missing out on the income tax by, you know, this huge sales tax, because that's a place where it's easier to sort of, you know, charge people. And so they have, you know, I mean, you work in the hotel industry and the tax for hotels is the same, 19%. You know, you get exempted if you're a foreign, like a foreign tourist, but otherwise everyone has to pay. So it's just one of these things, you know, that shows you how the COVID hits the developing countries harder, and things here are already more complicated.
I think you're totally on point with that. Is the informal, let's say, informal economy pushes the VAT up so the government can recuperate some of the lost income. Mm-hmm. But by the same rationale, of course, it pushes more people to the informal economy to go down to this you know, San Andresitos and this gray area of between legal and illegal commerce. You know, it's, you know, we could go to San Andresito every day of the year and not pay VAT. It seems interesting to me this. But as you were saying, it is complex and more complicated here. And, you know, it's this, we're recording this on a Thursday and the figures are out. From the Instituto Nacional de Salud, so the National Health Institute, and they're the ones with the Ministry of Health, who published the figures for contagions and spreads and so on. And I mean, you know, we've had the highest rate of deaths declared today. It's 163 deaths, and I know this is nothing like Brazil, the US, or the UK, but if our average is, you know, most days are between 70 and 90, this is a huge increase. And our total amount of cases that we've had in Colombia have been 80,599, and yet there are still 44,460 active cases. It's only increasing, and I'm, you know, very concerned because of the complexities to Colombia. And yeah, it seems that obviously Bogota, being the big international city and the big sort of hub for everything, it obviously, you know, the population that we've got here, I guess it's almost 10 million. Of course it's going to be. But what's happening up on the Caribbean coast in the Department of Atlantico, where Barranquilla is, and of course Cartagena and Bolivar, that's very concerning indeed, because, and we come right back to that point of the informal economy. People work informally and they're not protected, and there's no sort of parachute for them when it comes to healthcare, or, you know, if they lose their jobs, and there's no money. And I wonder how, and maybe you as a correspondent here has heard or has seen what people might be doing, or how they might be planning to try and survive this economically and, of course, health-wise. Have you spoken to people on the streets about this?
Yeah, well, you know, Colombia and other countries in South America reacted to the pandemic by ordering lockdowns, which might have been good at the beginning, but with so many people working, you know, selling things, street vendors and so forth, it's been very hard to sustain. Even though it might be a good idea in theory, it's been very hard to sustain. And you know, I think this is why the cases are going up. I read something about, you know, Peru has had the lockdown same time as Colombia, about 3 months. And for example, one of the problems they had there is that a very low percentage of the population owns a refrigerator at home. So they can't buy food for several days. So they have to go to the market all the time, you know, and the market becomes like a risk, like a contagion point.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I forgot the exact number, but it was something like, you know, only 30% of the population owns a fridge at home, something like that, right? Mm. So these things end up affecting you and end up making it harder to control the infection levels. In Colombia, maybe it's not 30%, you know, maybe it's half of the population owns a fridge at home. So you have these dynamics that make the social distancing much harder to enforce. And then you also have behavioral problems. Like in Cali, or actually this week, one of the directors of the police in Colombia said that they had to, intervene in 2,200 parties around the country. 2,200, right? And that's the police's official figure. So if they intervene 2,200, maybe there's 10,000 parties happening in the country on a given weekend, you know? And in Cali, the situation is so bad that they made a month ago a special unit of the police just to patrol the city to break up parties, like dance parties, or people getting together to have a beer, you know, block parties. So there's like a combination of just like the structural things, like people not owning a fridge or people not having jobs that can be done from home. And then like the behavior thing of like being a tropical country and people not being used to social distancing, you know, it's probably easier to tell people in Germany not to have parties than in Colombia, that type of thing. You know? So it's like, I think those two things, the behavior of people and the structural issues are making it, it's like really hard to contain. And I think that the contagion levels are going to keep on increasing for a while. And then the bad part is that if you have more contagion, then the death rates are going to go up because the hospitals might run out of ICUs. We've been lucky in Colombia so far that at least in the main cities, there's still enough of these ventilators and ICUs. I mean, in Bogota, right now it's about 70% are full or 60-something percent. So it's not yet what happened in Italy where they didn't have enough ventilators for everyone, for all the people who got really sick. I think I'm afraid that it could get to that point because if these contagion levels keep on going up, or we'll have to see if the government tries to kind of rein the economy in again and close certain sectors again. That might be another thing that could happen.
I think they probably will, because there's just so little that they can do. I mean, any government in the world is not going to handle this particularly well, aside from, let's say, New Zealand and Germany, I think, are the two examples. But you can't expect a government, you know, let's say a government like what we have, or a government in neighboring countries, or even, you know, the lies coming out of Venezuela, we can't expect them to manage it in the way that somewhere like New Zealand or Germany can handle this. I mean, just look at the UK. And what I mean, that's a chaos. I mean, that's it makes me embarrassed to be from there. But I can't levy the blame at President Duque. I mean, he's just sort of there. So I figured,
for me, he's like a character who's being overwhelmed.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. Someone who's been overwhelmed.
I mean, I think he'd make a good vice president, you know, not taking the center stage. I don't want to get more into that, but he does look overwhelmed and he's not the right guy for the job. I don't know. And I do not have a solution, but I imagine that they'll create another lockdown for us. And now we've been in for, we're closing in on 100 days. People want to go out. That was, you know, plain for everyone to see on the VAT free day. People are desperate and need to work. I don't know how we're going to pull this together. It's very worrying indeed, especially as the curve seems to be increasing. Now, one epidemiologist the other day said, well, you know, the peak will be around mid-August. And then the next day, President Duque is saying, you know, we're going to have to be prepared to be living with this and not having celebrations at Christmas, potentially. I mean, this is hardcore.
Yeah, it's, and you see it, you know, you see it's kind of symptoms of how bad it is. For example, with this whole migrant situation, right? These people just walking back home because they lost their jobs.
Now you're half Venezuelan, and you've done stories, I'm sure, on the issues of Venezuelan migrants. Mm-hmm. What is going on? I mean, I know several thousand, or I don't know how many have walked back to Venezuela.
Yeah.
And there's a huge encampment on the outskirts of Bogota in the north where people are waiting to go north. But what about the guys downtown in all of these pay by the night hotels where they, you know, fit 15 people to a room in, you know, Barrio Los Mártires and places like that? I mean, have you been able to chase up any stories on this?
Yeah, I was doing some stories on that in March and April, and you know, the COVID lockdown basically just took out kind of like the people at the bottom of the economic pyramid. You know, the mm-hmm. people who were working as street vendors lost their jobs. They had no savings. They couldn't pay rent. So the owners of the building started to push them out. There's a law that says that you can't expel people, but the law's not being imposed. So as a result, we see so many of these people trying to go back home. And it's not only in Colombia. Here in the roads, you find Venezuelans that say that they've been walking for a month and began in Peru or began in Ecuador. Or even one time I even found a guy who said he started in Chile and he had been on the road for more than a month. It's just some of the migrants have been left with nothing, and they prefer to go back to Venezuela where they don't have to pay rent. That's the only advantage that they mention about Venezuela is, okay, well, at least I don't have to pay rent there, and I can just huddle up with my family there and try to ride out the crisis, you know. So it's quite a serious humanitarian situation going on there. The government says that more than 70,000 Venezuelans have returned so far. Some of those had like a little bit of money left and got together and hired buses. Lots of those just walking back home for 3 weeks or more and doing the same thing that they did a couple years ago, because many of those people came to Colombia walking as well.
Can you imagine?
They were broken Venezuelans and didn't have money for the bus. Yeah, it's...
I've said it before.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. How bad does life get that you put your belongings in a tiny backpack and walk for weeks? I mean, this is how desperate and how upsetting it is. And as you say, people walk home just because they don't have to pay rent.
Yeah,
You know, you put yourself through physical and mental trauma. And to return to a country with a collapsed healthcare system. I mean, let's not lie about it. It's we know that the healthcare system
with horrible wages and with food shortages and problems in public services like water or electricity. Mm-hmm. The only advantage for them is that they don't have to pay rent, and that's why some of these people who lost their jobs and had no savings are going back. And it's also like a funny twist of history because I don't know if you know about the history of Colombia, but during the War of Independence 200 years ago, sort of like one of the crucial things that helped Colombia to beat the Spaniards was like these soldiers from the Llanos of Venezuela who walked also all the way to Bogotá, fighting battles and so forth. Passing through all of Boyacá and getting to Bogotá, right? Defeating the Spanish. And now it's the Venezuelans walking here to find a job or walking back home. And one of the places that they have to walk on their way back to Venezuela is like that historical monument where the key battle took place, the Battle of Boyacá. So I don't know, for me, it's such a like epic thing, you know? Like 200 years later, history repeating itself or something like that.
That's good. I like that. Obviously, I don't like what's happening, but I like the story, and it's a nice quirk to bring this conversation to an end. Thank you for your time and your insights and your knowledge. Please keep on reporting and getting the pieces out there and on TV pieces and written pieces out there so people beyond Colombia can know what's going on here. It's so important that you continue to do this. And please, as always, stay safe. Keep yourself, as safe and as healthy as possible. And all of you out there listening. And if you're listening in Germany, I know that you can have good parties there. it wasn't an insult from Manuel there at all. It's just a somewhat slight comparison between German nature and and Colombian nature. And I know my Colombian friends in Germany will just be nodding their heads at this moment. So there's nothing against Germany, Manuel, of course. So thank you again for being on the show.
Sure. Thanks, Richard. It's a pleasure to join.
Yeah, it's been a great pleasure to have Manuel Rueda, a freelance journalist here in Colombia, writing for the international media. Look up his stuff on the AP, on PRI World, of course, TRT World out of Turkey, the Christian Science Monitor, DWTV as well. Basically, a bit of everything. And you'll get great reporting for about what's happening here on the ground in Colombia. As always, as I say, stay safe, everyone out there. I know you've enjoyed this episode. Very informative, very conversational. The last few episodes have been great. Last week with Jenny Erin Smith talking about the PISA mutation gene is creating early onset Alzheimer's in rural Antioquia. Prior to that, we had Emma Louise Jay on for her, her isolation in Antioquia, and of course Julianne Pacheco talking about her new book The Anthill, based in Medellin as well. So of course, share the word, spread the news about Colombia Calling, share it with your friends, and be sure to tune in next week. We've got another interesting person lined up for episode 332. Thank you again. I've been Richard McColl. This has been Colombia Calling. Bye bye.
Chinchorro y atarra.